This is The Edge with your hosts, Jonathan Von Tobel.
All right, welcome in. Second hour. We have plenty of stuff to get to here in the next 55 minutes. We got a World Series game later tonight. We got a Big Ten game later tonight, too. We can revisit that, at least in terms of a line and where we're at, because Illinois and Wisconsin will kick off their season this evening. We also have plenty of the NFL left to get to. Jacksonville, Los Angeles is kind of a good game. Like, I'm kind of in on this. Jags and Chargers. I'm looking forward to it. But we start with the World Series because I'm excited. Game three, Dodgers, Rays. Series tied up at one game apiece. Right now, at least in terms of a price on this one, between these two, if you remember the opener, Dodgers opened up as a $1.55 favorite, plus 145 on the other side with the Rays. We've moved down 10 cents. Dodgers minus 145, Rays plus 135, total 7.5. Shaded to nothing. It is a pick right now. So here's the thing between these two, because we're going to get Morton and we are going to get Walker Buehler. And I had made the case the other day, but I'm just going to reiterate and like revisit this from a conversation standpoint. It's that I felt like after we watched two games, and right, hindsight's 20/20, but with the performance of these bullpens, and even though the Rays came in, especially in a couple of spots, high leverage spots, and took care of business in the last game, still gave up a couple of solo home runs, and the bullpen to this point has given up three home runs in this series for the Tampa Bay Rays, compared to just one for the Dodgers. But the Dodgers bullpen has a five, it's a definitely over five, an ERA over five. So regardless, the bullpens haven't performed extremely well. It seems like maybe this series is going to play a little bit more over than it would under. Now, having said that, I think this is the game that I'd rather bet under, and the market agreed. After this opened up eight, shaded to the under at minus 120, we're now sitting at that 7.5 across the board. When you have two pitchers, the level of Morton and Buehler, and the way that they have been pitching in the World Series, you can understand that the market, excuse me, World Series, in the postseason, you can understand why the market is going to drive this game under the total. Buehler in the postseason has been absolutely fantastic. 19 total innings pitched, just 15 hits, and the 11 walks are an issue. And in fact, back-to-back starts, it was the Padres series, and then, of course, his first appearance in the Braves series, ended up losing that one. But between those two starts, he had walked nine guys. In all, in his first three starts in the postseason for Walker Buehler, he had walked a total of 11 guys. But last time out, six innings pitched, seven hits, did not walk a guy, and that was in his last appearance against the Atlanta Braves. I think probably, because if you remember, he'd been dealing with, of course, the blister issue at the beginning part of the postseason. I think the walks were, the lack of command at least, more of a side effect of the blisters he was dealing with as opposed to anything else that was wrong with Walker Buehler. Now with the extra time to rest, get ready for this one, and the showing of more command in the last appearance for Buehler with no walks over six innings strong, I would be more prone to think that he has got the command issue under control and he's going to be ready to go here and get ready to go to face a Tampa Bay Rays team that loves to swing and miss at stuff, man. And this sets up beautifully for Walker Buehler, a guy who has been striking out the hitters nonstop. And even with the blister issues, over 19 innings pitched in this postseason, 29 strikeouts per nine of about 13.5. For Walker Buehler. So he's been in fantastic form, but that also doesn't take away from a guy like Charlie Morton, who has been equally as good, if not better, at least in the postseason. The numbers for Morton are nuts, and you see him there. The whip of 0.96, the 17 strikeouts over 15 and two-thirds innings of work in the postseason, the 0.57 ERA. Now, Morton does have expected fielding independent that is over three. And so there is some sign for some regression at some point, but still under four. So to me, at least in my personal barometer, right, XFIP that is perfectly fine in terms of backing and dealing with it here. But overall, so look, I have the Rays on the adjusted series price after game one at plus 330. Feel like this is a spot, though, for the Dodgers. Buehler's been pitching extremely well. The way that he pitches with that fastball, which is absolutely, I'll use a big word, majestic, the way that he uses it, induces swing and misses. And the fact that you get a lineup that has been prone to swinging and missing, and yes, aggressiveness is a very good thing for them, and it worked out in game two. I don't think your aggression as a lineup is going to work against a guy like Walker Buehler, who has been inducing swing and misses and getting strikeouts at the rate that he has, and now he's fully rested and ready to go. Obviously, this jumping down 10 cents, there is some value here on the Dodgers. And overall, I think I'm in here for game three on the Los Angeles Dodgers. I think this is a much better spot for them here. I think against that lineup, the matchup works much better for a guy like Walker Buehler. And as far as Morton goes, look, I think this could be a lower scoring game. Obviously, the numbers would dictate that these two guys and the way that they've been swinging the bats, and by the way, the fickle nature of the Dodgers lineup for the most part has kind of shown that as well. But when I have a guy like Morton who's pitching so well, who's got an ERA of 0.57, but that xFIP of well over 3, and the sign for some regression, even though it is regression to the point where you become, right, a godly pitcher to an extremely good pitcher, that regression and that room for that regression is still here for Morton. And while it's still there for Buehler's numbers as well, given the matchup, I think we're still going to see damn good Walker Buehler here today. And so down to $1.45, I think I'd rather back the Dodgers here in this spot, -145. And I will see, you know, see where this number goes, because it seems like $1.45 is the lowest this is going to get. Will Hill's up to 146. Now, obviously, a big adjustment there. 148 over at Circa right now. 145 pretty much everywhere else, including where we're sitting at right now. Couple of other spots around town as high as $1.55. But to me, it's going to be Dodgers here tonight, and we'll see. They take game 2 and then the rest of the series, how that plays out. But I think they're in a pretty good spot here. And you see that, by the way, the exact outcomes, and haven't messed with any of these. Dodgers to win in 6, plus 260, plus 330 in 7, and 5, plus 350. Rays on the other side in 7, 5 to 1, 550 in 6, and then, of course, in 5 to win essentially 4 straight, sitting at 11 to 1 for the Tampa Bay Rays. So with that, let's move on. College football later this weekend. Some really good games to get to. Let's talk a little bit about Notre Dame and Pittsburgh. So I'm really fascinated by what we're going to see between these two clubs, right? Notre Dame opens up 8. Total opens at 48.5. And, you know, you have to wonder, at least to me, like the first thing that stuck out was how Notre Dame's running game works against one of the best front sevens in the country, to me, is going to be the matchup to watch. It is going to be fascinating to watch. Kyren Williams posted his third 100-yard game of 2020, 127 yards against Louisville. Notre Dame has been working the ground game. It's been a big part of their offense. Williams now ranks 2nd in the ACC, 6th in FBS in rushing yards per game at 121.5, as well as 3rd in the ACC and 8th in the FBS in all-purpose yards is 151.2. So Williams is going to be and has been the focal point of Notre Dame's offense. This has gotten up to 10. Totals dropped, though, 6 full points from 48.5 to 42.5. It's always interesting when you see the favorite get bumped up to double digits, but then the total gets driven down by, like we said, 6 points at this point right now off of the opener, which is the openers I'm using, by the way, as always on the show, courtesy of Circa, first to market here. But what's interesting about this, right, is the fact that not only has Williams for Notre Dame been absolutely dominant, but Pitt ranks 1st in the country in rush defense, 61.5 yards per game for the Panthers, 1.85 yards per rush. Think about that. Opposing offenses are running it 5 times and still not getting a first down if they're matching up with that front seven of the Pittsburgh Panthers. That is insane. They're the only team in the country, though, the only team in the country giving up less than 2 yards per carry. There's one that escapes me that has given up exactly 2 yards per carry, but they've just been dominant. They've only given up 2 rushing touchdowns this season. It's a great front seven that they're dealing with. And you know what? The secondary's been burned, but it's an opportunistic secondary, right? And just overall, the front seven. Pitt leads the ACC in sacks, 4.83 sacks per game, 11.2 tackles for loss, 2nd and 3rd respectively nationally in those categories. They have a dominant pass rusher in Patrick Jones as well. The secondary, when it gives up yards and big plays, it is there, but at the same time, tied with Syracuse for the ACC lead in interceptions, and how Ian Book, who really takes care of the ball, matches up with this defense is going to be really interesting, because Ian Book, you don't want to call him a tepid passer or a guy who's not really aggressive, but he takes care of the football, doesn't take a lot of chances, which helps out Notre Dame in certain games and in tight games like the one we just saw, right, against Louisville. But this matchup, offense versus defense, Notre Dame's offense versus Pitt, is going to be incredible. And the other part about this, too, is that it looks like Pitt is going to roll with Joey Yellen one more time. Wasn't great against Miami, 22 of 46, 277, just 6 yards per attempt for Yellen at quarterback, taking over, of course, for Kenny Pickett. He only had 1 touchdown, fumbled it twice, one of which he lost. Overall, Pitt's offense, though, the numbers were well below their season averages. They were dreadful against the Hurricanes. You're talking about 3.8 yards per play, 5.1 is their season average, 300 total yards, even though their season average is 390.2. Again, these numbers from that Miami game. So I can understand why the market drives this up to 10, right? But at some point, like with how good this Pitt defense is, you know, where do you see this come in terms of action coming in on the Panthers? Just don't love what you get from them offensively to the point where it gives you some confidence, right? So the lean here is to Pittsburgh. Obviously would love if Pickett was in the lineup, and if Pickett's in the lineup, this is not going to be 10. I can guarantee you that. And here's the other thing too. Those terrible numbers that I just listed off for Pitt's offense, well, that was against Miami, who is not as good as Notre Dame defensively. And Notre Dame, 4.91 yards per play, 308.8 yards per game, 11.5 points per game to opponents on the season. Much better than the Hurricanes defense that they just faced. So they barely scrambled together an offense against Miami. How that works against Notre Dame, of course, leads you to believe that it's not going to be a great offensive performance for Pitt in this matchup. Having said that, Georgia Tech at Boston College, also a fascinating game here, also in the ACC. Two teams that I've been really interested in. Georgia Tech, a team that if you've been watching this show at the beginning of the season, had some high expectations for, been burned here. And it's fascinating, too, because you have Georgia Tech coming off of a 73-7 beatdown at the hands of Clemson. You have Boston College coming off of getting smacked in the face by Virginia Tech 40-14. They were outscored, the Eagles, 23-7 the second half, all 23 points unanswered after they managed a touchdown on their opening drive of the half. So you have two teams coming off of bad losses. You know, I wonder if at like one point, if you're Georgia Tech, right? Like on the surface, it's like, holy crap, how do you bounce back from 73-7? But I think at some point, once you're getting your face caved in, don't you become numb to the beatdown? And like at a certain extent, if you're Georgia Tech, the 73-7 doesn't faze you because you knew the entire time you were never in it. And so I wonder if really it is like a terrible spot for Georgia Tech coming off of a game like that where you really didn't have to sweat it and you were never really in it. But regardless, how Boston College is able to handle Georgia Tech's running game to me is going to be the matchup to watch. Eagles right now, 52nd in rush defense, are giving up 4.59 yards per carry, essentially 4.6 almost, 177.2 yards per game. To me, it's a small issue because the Yellow Jackets, look, they got a talented squad in key areas like quarterback and running back. Jahmyr Gibbs, 299 yards, 4.9 yards per carry. He's a young kid who the program likes, who seems to have a really high ceiling, and it goes beyond him as well. As an offense, Georgia Tech 22nd in terms of overall rush offense as a team. They're averaging 4.57 yards per carry as a unit, 195.6 yards per game. And Gibbs is part of that, but so is Jeff Sims. And Sims has done a little bit of a better job in terms of taking care of the ball. Now, he's also a talented rusher, though. Clemson bottled him up for negative 23 yards on 13 carries. But in the four games prior to the matchup with Clemson, you're talking about Sims racking up 251 yards on 44 carries. That's 5.7 yards per attempt. The key for him is taking care of the ball and limiting turnovers because he has committed 12 turnovers in five games. He's got to be able to hold on to the ball. And if he does, at least statistically, it looks like Georgia Tech should be able to exploit what Boston College does defensively. We should note, too, by the way, Brian Edwards was with us earlier. Vegas B. Edwards up on Twitter did like the Boston College side of this as well. But when it comes to the other part of this, and this is why BC, like, the one, like, bit of trepidation I have here with this team in terms of Boston College, extremely, extremely one-dimensional, and in fact, might be the definition of one-dimensional. I'll pull up the exact numbers for them in terms of their rushing offense. One of the worst rushing offenses in the National Football League, in the country, Boston College up to this point. And when you're one-dimensional, obviously it helps out in terms of other teams being able to work that against you, to use the cliche, pin the ears back and get after you, because that's the other part about it, is Boston College, while they're extremely one-dimensional, actually has a really intriguing and I think very good passing attack. It's high tempo. They can spread the ball around. You like the quarterback as well. And so if they can exploit a Georgia Tech defense that isn't the strongest, that is remains to be seen, of course. But when you're just so one-dimensional, and here's the numbers too, Boston College, of 77 teams, they are 75th in the country in rushing offense, averaging 66.2 yards per game, 2.15 yards per rush, only four rushing touchdowns on the year. Like when you're that bad in terms of not being able to produce anything from a rushing offense standpoint, even if it's one of the worst defenses in the country, which Georgia Tech isn't, by the way, and the numbers are going to be skewed after what Clemson did to them. But I'm just saying, like, even in another matchup where it's a worse defense or a bad defense, at least knowing what's going to come at you from an effective standpoint helps you out. So regardless, the number has been driven up. The market's driven this up. Originally opened up Boston College -2 at 58.5. This number's gone up to 3.5 right now here at the South Point. Total has dropped, though, from 58.5 to 54.5. So again, we have the favorite getting bet up, the total dropping down extremely, this one by 4 points. So up to 3.5. I'd like to see where the market goes to, obviously. This gets to 4, something like that. I might be looking maybe a little bit at Georgia Tech here. But again, take that with a grain of salt because I have not had a good read on a Georgia Tech team that I thought was going to be pretty good this year. Not so much maybe in that Clemson game. But overall, I thought they had a pretty high ceiling. Two other games, and we'll just update the numbers really quickly here. Iowa and Purdue on the board as well. And, of course, we know at least in terms of Purdue and the issues with the coaching staff in terms of COVID. We have seen the number flip here. Purdue originally opened up a 2-point favorite, now 3.5 on the side of Iowa with a total of 52 after opened up 53.5. And then you get Michigan at Minnesota. Michigan originally a 2-point favorite over Minnesota. Now we're looking at 3.5 with a total of 54. Minnesota, of course, as we know, last home win over the Wolverines, 1977, a 16-0 victory against the then number one team in the country, Michigan. And how about this stat? ESPN had this stat. This is really fascinating. Makes sense because we know about the turnstile that has been the quarterback position for Michigan and John Harbaugh. Joe Milton, who's going to start a quarterback for Harbaugh, the first time Harbaugh opens a season as a head coach of the Wolverines with a starting quarterback that he recruited out of high school. Indications are that they love Milton, the arm and the upside. Had no real opinion on this game, but this is going to be a massive one. We'll see if Milton, essentially the first homegrown product for Harbaugh, if he can essentially cure the ails of the quarterback position that has cursed John since he has gotten there. All right, when we come back, NAC to the National Football League, one more game to get to. Chargers-Jags, can't wait for that. We'll also have analysis on another NFL game because our first winter contest is here. Skydiver racing the distaff, or will she test the boys again in the classic? Owner Peter Callahan discusses her Breeders' Cup plans on the Ron Flatter Racing Pod. There's also two Triple Crowns that could be won this weekend on opposite sides of the world. Ashley Mayhew talks about Mighty Heart's bid to win it in Canada with just one eye, and Kate Hunter previews Contrail's run for a sweep in Japan. The Ron Flatter Racing Pod is available now at vsin.com/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It is sponsored by First Bet. All right. One last game to get to in the National Football League. We've cleared out the rotation entirely for the most part throughout the entire week. If you were with us earlier in the week, you know where I'm going on this one. But worth discussing is the line has moved a little bit back toward a favorable spot for, I guess, do I reference it as us? Even though I have no us, it's just me. Chargers up to an 8-point favorite now again. Total of 49 here against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Opener was 9.5. I am sorry for this reference, and I know that there was one guy who I have to pull the tweet up, but he is a diehard Jags fan. He even put it in his Twitter handle, warning me against betting on the Jacksonville Jaguars, saying, don't do it, bro. My thought was, don't do it, as at least in terms of don't be a Jags fan. That's got to be a terrible existence. Anyway, sorry, I got distracted. Somebody else tweeted me. I got to read that in a second. But the Jacksonville Jaguars, so to me, this isn't so much about, as weird as it's going to sound, it's not so much about backing the Jacksonville Jaguars as it is, again, and this has been kind of the strategy for me throughout, you know, football seasons in general. It's about buying low and selling high in certain situations, right? And if you've listened to the program, you know that for the last 4 weeks, it has been sell on the Jacksonville Jaguars, despite the fact that the market has bet them every single game. Miami, the 2.5-point spread in which they were favored, they should not have been. Cincinnati, that game was sitting on 3, gets driven down to 1. Houston, that game went to 5.5, we're closing back at 6.5. Detroit got to 3.5, closed back at 3. You know, the market has given Jacksonville support, and it hasn't been warranted in certain situations, right? Well, now here, we get the Los Angeles Chargers. And why, to me, this makes sense, that it would be a buy-low spot here on the Jacksonville Jaguars, is the Chargers are a team that I think are at their peak in terms of market value, right? We're talking about a Chargers team that ultimately, on the closing number at least, covered against Cincinnati. That was not a game in which we saw Justin Herbert. We saw them in that Kansas City game almost get a win, blow that lead that they had, and which became a common theme later, but ultimately covered that game in which they were catching 9. Market kind of overreacts and isn't in on the Carolina Panthers. So then they close as a 6-point favorite, the Chargers do, over the Panthers. They lose that game outright. And then you get the Buccaneers game where they had that big lead against the Tampa Bay Bucks. And it, depending on what number you got right, 7.5 are widely available. We'll say that they covered that game or a push up against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And then you have the Monday night game against the New Orleans Saints, pretty banged up with other star wide receiver. And of course, they cover that game and end up blowing another lead and losing out right there. But now this is the reversal, right? We talk about this all the time. It's role reversal, and the Chargers are in that role right now because we have seen two spots this season in which they have been favored, right? That Bengals game that we mentioned, that of course they win and cover because AJ Green is called for an offensive pass interference on a touchdown that would have won the game for the Cincinnati Bengals. I think there was time left on the clock, so we don't know what would happen after that. And then of course that spot against the Panthers, but Justin Herbert has been so good. And the market, I think, has been so burned by a Jags team that it has frequently supported throughout this NFL season. We saw this number open 9.5, which, come on, stop. I get it. Herbert's been great. It's the Jags. 9.5 for this Chargers team is not a number that you should be laying or should be on the market. And the market, sure enough, drove that all the way down to the lowest point of 7.5. But now it's slowly starting to climb back up. And I think this is the spot where you're buying at the low for the Jacksonville Jaguars, right? And the ultimate high going against the Los Angeles Chargers. This is the spot where I'm going to be in here on the Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm going to see where this number goes. Eights are starting to pop up. It's here at the South Point. If you're listening over at DraftKings, it looks like there's an 8 out there. There's 7.5, so almost everywhere else too. What's interesting is a spot like the Westgate has 7.5, but if you want to take 7.5, you're laying a price. Other spots have this 8. So again, I don't know if it's going to get anywhere past 8. Maybe that's going to be the ceiling, although the market does funny things by the time we get to game day. But to me, this is just the buy low spot. It has been fade Jacksonville, don't want any part of them. Market has overvalued them. But now it might be the spot to do it. And, of course, I could be wrong because nobody's 100% ever. But this is the strategy that I've been using, and we'll see if this works here for the Jacksonville Jaguars, who I think I'm buying at their ultimate low. And I could be wrong. And we should know, too, Gardner Minshew. It's not been performing well, man. We're talking about a guy that I think a lot of people had a lot of faith in considering how he performed early on. But Minshew now, total grade, at least according to PFF, 65.6. So Minshew mania no more, it seems, at this point. But could be a spot here against the Chargers to support. All right, plenty left to get to. When we return, we'll get to the weather aspect of things. Kevin Roth, meteorologist, Roto-Grinders, joins us next. Now available on Roku and Amazon Fire TV. We've partnered with the Racetrack Network to deliver VSiN on your connected TV for only $4 a month. Visit RTN.tv to learn more. Download the VSiN, Roku, or Amazon Fire TV app. While you're there, check out everything the Racetrack Network has to offer. Go to RTN.tv to sign up. Get the VSiN app on your Roku or Amazon Fire TV today. That's RTN.tv. It is the Edge here on VSiN. Last 25 minutes or so here of the program before we head off into the weekend and hand it off to Betting Across America. But let's welcome in Kevin Roth. Nice enough to give us some time here, of course, meteorologist over at Roto Grinders. Kevin, I appreciate the time, man. So let's just start with this. It is getting closer to November, and we are finally having our first winter game in the National Football League, are we not?
Yeah, we kind of skipped fall. We went right from summer into a legitimate winter game, and there's only one game this week that matters, so you can take all of the games except for the game in Denver and throw them out. But yeah, there's a lot in that Denver game that I'm looking at.
So what's the weather forecast here? It is going to snow, is that correct?
Yeah, there's two issues. One, and the thing we can certainly count on is it's going to be freezing. And I don't mean that hyperbole. I mean, it is quite literally going to be below freezing. I've got the temperature at around 22 degrees for kickoff, probably falling into the upper teens as the game goes. You know, that's beyond cold. That is, 10 degrees below freezing. So the temperature itself is an issue. It makes it harder to kick long field goals. It makes it harder to throw the ball and to catch the ball. So the temperature alone, I'm concerned. And you mentioned snow, and I do think we will at least see some snow falling. I don't think it's likely to get to the level that it's, a whiteout or you can't move the ball because of the snow. but it's going to be real cold, and we probably will see at least some snow.
So let me ask you, do we have any indication on wind speed? Because the one thing, you know, working with Michael Lombardi here, the one thing he has told me as a former GM of a team is usually the market will overreact to freezing cold temperatures. And this is actually one of the games, we were talking about this earlier, the totals dropped 3 points. Yep. Freezing cold, though, doesn't necessarily equate to unders. It's more about the wind that affects the scoring. What do we know anything about the wind speed?
Yeah, you nailed that. I'm always looking at, you know, is there precipitation? Is there rain? Is there snow? What's the temperature? And most importantly, is it going to be windy? And when I say windy, I mean sustained winds 15 right. to 20 miles per hour, wind gust 30. We're looking at sustained winds here of around 10 miles per hour. It is not particularly windy. And because of that, I do think you could make the argument that, like you said, the market's overreacted. I think the over-unders dropped 2.5 or 3 points here. I do have a small sample size on similar weather games played at Sports Authority Field at Mile High here. And in four similar weather games, the passing yards have dropped 11%. The average score has dropped 23%. Mm. You could make an argument that's anecdotal because it's only four games. It's not often you play games that are at 20 degrees, but the statistics do show that it would impact your scoring there.
You wouldn't happen to have the teams that they have faced, did you? Because that's also part of the equation too, right? Over a short sample size, like if it was Broncos and Jags and like three other terrible offenses, that would probably factor into the equation.
Right. No, I do not. And absolutely, you know, really more than anything, and if you're talking four games, that's not enough. Yeah. If you zoom this out to similar weather games played just in the NFL in general since 2000, there has been 96 similar weather games, and that's within a certain range of temperature and wind speed. The passing yards have dropped 6%. The average score has only dropped 1%.
There you go. And speaking to maybe the overreaction of seeing this. And Kevin, you know what's great is when you look at it's funny, like on a Sunday, in an NFL book or in a sports book during NFL Sundays, the same thing happens every time where people will be watching the screens because they'll have all the pregames up and they'll mm-hmm. see snow. And all of a sudden you'll see everybody run up to the window to start betting the game under because they see snow and they think it's going to be a low scoring game. Misfactoring one, the fact that we talked about the wind and that being the biggest factor. But the other, the fact that the books actually have access to everything that we're talking about here and thinking they have not factored it into the number.
Yeah. And one thing about snow is, look, if it's truly a whiteout, if mm-hmm. it's really going to be snowing, okay, you know, that can slow down your offense. But if you're talking about, you know, a little bit of snow, less than an inch of snow, probably not accumulating snow, then that's not going to be a big mm-hmm. issue. Could it impact some kicks? Sure. You know, we've seen kickers, they try to get that plant foot in, it slips out. So yes, it does matter a little bit, but unless it's a whiteout, I'm not that concerned. And I literally once saw Tom Brady throw 5 touchdown passes in one quarter, I believe, in the snow. So that tells me, you know, the snow isn't a be all end all.
Was that a Titans game on like Thanksgiving or something like that?
Yes, I think that was the one. Yeah, yep. That's the one.
Hey, so let me ask you. So obviously we get our first winter game here moving into November. It is safe to say that these are going to become a little bit more frequent. So where can people find all the stuff that you have so they can keep track of these sort of things?
Yeah, there's two spots. I keep a forecast updated all week long on rotogrinders.com. And there's just a little tab, NFL weather. It's pretty easy to find. And the other thing I'd recommend is if you follow me on Twitter, I'm at Kevin Roth WX. And literally all I do is post sports weather. That's it. Yep. I'm a meteorologist. I post sports weather. That's all I do. So if you are interested in sports weather and the statistics that go along with that, find me on Twitter at Kevin Roth WX.
So before we get you out of here, speaking of that, because I was on your Twitter account earlier today, can you give us an update on the World Series? Because there is going to be some cold temperatures and there's questions about the roof being open, right?
Right. So I haven't seen if they're opening or closing the roof yet. If it is open, we're talking temperatures around 50 degrees and gusty winds. And we saw, I think it was in Game 4 of the ALCS, those winds were really swirling. It was a huge issue. Whereas if they close it, that would be more beneficial to runs because then you're not playing in 50 yep. degree weather.
And just like that, 20 minutes ago, Kevin Rosenthal, roof at Globe Life Field will be closed.
There you go. And I think that's less to do with the cold and more so how impactful those swirling winds last time. So that would lean me more towards the over. I don't love the over there, where if it was open, I would love the under yeah. with that cold weather.
The market's actually come off that 8. It's now 7.5. It's a pick, though, -110 on both sides. So there you go. Roof's going to be closed for those of you looking at the total in the World Series matchup later tonight. Again, Kevin Roth. You can find him up on Twitter, Kevin Roth WX. Kevin, appreciate the time and the info, man. Thank you.
Hey, anytime. Thanks for having me. And if you have any questions about sports weather, I'm always around.
Yep, you got it. Again, at Kevin Roth WX up on Twitter. And we'll have Kevin on more frequently now as we get into the winter weather and discuss some of that. But I do think it's really important. And I'm sure if you've listened to Lombardi Line, watched the Lombardi Line, Michael has talked about that. And it's one of the biggest lessons. I've taken a lot of lessons from Michael Lombardi in my time. But when you look at it overall, wind is much more effective and dictates the scoring a little bit more in NFL games than it would be frigid cold temperatures. And like we talked about there, unless it is a downpour of snow during the games, you won't see that much. But this is a game that has moved from 48.5 to 45.5. And so maybe the market, if they continue to see cold weather, and especially on Sunday, continue to drive that total down, but does open the door maybe for some slight value in the over in a matchup like this. But the Chiefs, again, up to a 9.5-point favorite, total 45.5. And again, the opener at 48.5. All right, last segment when we come back, plenty to get to in the world of college football, some group of five matchups we want to go over, update those, news out of the National Football League. We'll update what's happening with the Raiders one last time as well before we hand it off to Betting Across America here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. BetRivers Sportsbook has special offers on all the big events this weekend, including the World Series Profit Boost, with two 25% profit boosts tonight and every day of the World Series. Plus, UFC specials when you wager at least $254, I should say, on UFC 254 fights and get a $54 free bet. And, of course, Profit Boost Sundays with a 50% profit boost to use on one NFL game when you log in to the BetRivers Sportsbook app on Sundays. I'll say that one more time because I butchered it. UFC special. Wager at least $254 on UFC 254. Get a $54 free bet. And, of course, your Profit Boost Sundays, 50% profit boost to use on one NFL game when you log in to the BetRivers Sportsbook app on Sundays. There you go. Got to be 21, playable in Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. If you have a gambling problem, 1-800-GAMBLER is the number. Indiana, the number is 1-800-9 with it. Colorado, 1-800-522-4700. Playable in New Jersey as Play Sugar House. All right, avert your eyes. Turn your ears off. I don't know what that means. We do have a little bit of news. Again, it's not official, but it does give us an idea of what we could see coming up here because we don't know when the NBA and or NHL season could be starting, but we do have some news coming out of the association that the NBA is targeting December 22nd for the start of the 2020-21 season and that a 72-game campaign would be the idea that would finish before the 2021 Olympics. That is, of course, according to Shams Charania. Woj reported earlier today, of course, that the Board of Governors were meeting today. So it does look like potentially December 22nd start date, 72-game campaign that finishes before the 21 Olympics. Now, this is just me being a fan. And by the way, I'm a big Christmas guy, love Christmas. Why would you not just start it on Christmas Day, right? Like 3 days later, I think that'd be great. Get a big primetime day and everybody in action and ready to go on Christmas. But regardless, December 22nd, potential start, and a 72-game campaign for the NBA this coming season. Potentially, nothing official there. And a quick update again to reiterate for those who are just joining us and wondering what the situation is because there is a massive COVID spike and or not, I shouldn't call it a COVID spike, a COVID situation with the Las Vegas Raiders and what's going to potentially happen there. We do have some updates from today, from a few hours ago, if you haven't been checking up with what is happening around the National Football League. Ian Rappaport had been tweeting out earlier today some of the updates on the situation for the Las Vegas Raiders from at Rapsheet up on Twitter. Raiders offensive linemen are on the COVID-19 list because they are high-risk close contacts because, of course, they were in close contact with Trent Brown who tested positive. They do have a chance to play on Sunday. Star safety Jonathan Abram does not. He is listed as having contact with Trent Brown on Tuesday, would not be cleared in time. And as Deshaun Reed of The Athletic reports and adds to said report, five full days in isolation are what the offensive lineman got, which makes him eligible potentially for Sunday. It started on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, today, goes through tomorrow, which would be the fifth day, making the offensive lineman outside of Brown eligible to return on Sunday. So keep that in mind as you look at this line now for the Las Vegas Raiders, getting off of that four pretty much across town. Still, Westgate Superbook has 4 right now here in Vegas, but we're looking at 3.5 for the most part with a total of 52.5. Station still sitting on that 4 as well. So if you want to grab 4 with the Las Vegas Raiders, with the thought that they could potentially have 4 of their 5 guys back along the offensive line, there is an opportunity for you to do so. I would do so as well, considering where this number is at and looking at the news right now. You got to read between the lines a little bit. Total, of course, varies from 53.5, the number you see on your screen right there at the South Point, to 52, which is over at the Westgate Superbook, Circus Sports, and other shops around Las Vegas. So that's your update. News out of the NBA, news with the Raiders. Now we can get to a little bit more on college football, and we'll start in the Mountain West. A couple of games to get to, and actually, there are quite a few games, Matt. I'm sorry. I wanted to go just a little out of order because Wyoming-Nevada is a game that has been quite dramatic in terms of some of the line moves. It is a game that I'm involved with as well, and it's a game we should update here because we have seen the market kind of correct itself a little bit here. I guess if you want to use that term. I don't know. I don't have a better one. So Wyoming-Nevada. Circa opens this up Wyoming -2 on the road. This number gets to as high as 5. And then now we're sitting at Wyoming -3 with a total of 51. I'm in on Nevada. Got him at +5 at Circa this morning as well. Look, the Wolf, this is actually a matchup, and I talked about this with Matt Eumanns. I think I've mentioned it on this show before. Wyoming 12-1, Nevada 50-1 to win the Mountain West. But these are two teams in the conference that if we're talking outside of the normal, the usual suspects, especially Boise State, who we'll get to momentarily, has got a pretty good team coming back this year, especially offensively. But these are two teams that are really deep, I think have a really high ceiling in this conference and have a shot to make it to the Mountain West title game. And if you remember too, the official now standings are going to be dictated by win percentage in the Mountain West. So it's not by divisions. So again, you look at the schedules and dictate what these teams could be. But for this game specifically, look, Wyoming, I think is a really high ceiling. We're talking about a team that brings back a very big chunk of their offense intact, including their sophomore quarterback, their leading rushers and 2 guys behind him as well. This could potentially be the best offense that Craig Bohl has had in a really long time over at Wyoming, given everything that they have back from Sean Chambers to lead that offense, to Xavier Valade, who's got over 1,200 yards, 5.1 yards per attempt, 6 touchdowns last year, top 2 backups, and an offensive line entirely back from last year, right? Sets up really nicely for Wyoming. There are certain parts about the defense that they're going to have to worry about and rebuild. Only 5 starters are back. Best 2 linebackers from 2019 are in the NFL. They do have a pair of starters back in the secondary, though, so that's going to help. But with your linebackers not there, with some key personnel gone on the defensive side, you know, 5 is pretty high for this Wyoming team, right? I think they could be pretty good this year. But you're also talking about a Nevada team that brings back a total of 18 starters, 10 on offense, their starting quarterback, nearly their entire offensive line, their entire backfield. Like, there's a lot to like about the Wolfpack, too, here, and in their 4th year under Norvell. So while this is a very big matchup and between 2 teams that could be very big surprises in the Mountain West, to make Wyoming a 5-point favorite, the market, to make him a 5-point favorite on the road against Nevada is a pretty, pretty big move. And so I took 5 this morning, already back down to 3. No real shot on the total here. But Eumanns and I talked about this yesterday on My Guys in the Desert. I actually thought Nevada was going to be like a 1-point favorite. And so we'll see where this number ultimately gets to by the time we reach Saturday's kickoff at 4 p.m. Eastern. But a very big game between these two already in the Mountain West and the market coming off of that big number of 5. So from there, let's talk about Boise State's Utah State as well. Boise State opens up 17 over at Circa with a total of 54.5. A lot to like about this Boise State team. Really good depth actually almost everywhere too, as they bring back guys that are extremely key in multiple positions. Hank Bachmeier is going to return here and play quarterback for the Boise State Broncos, a kid who last year was very good for this team. Some think maybe one of the best players in the conference at this point, but Bachmeier, if you remember, was a starting quarterback for them as a true freshman last year. And granted, Florida State last year was not very good, but did start a game as a true freshman in Tallahassee and led the Boise State Broncos to a win there, throwing over 50 passes. The problem with Bachmeier was twofold, right? One wasn't really his fault. The other, though, was, but they worked lock and step with one another. It was that his offensive line wasn't very good, and he held on to the ball way too long. So he took a lot of hits, quite a bit, was knocked in and out of games a few times, and one of the games in which he got knocked out of for almost a month wasn't due to a poor offensive line. It was just a hit on a scramble. But regardless, you like almost everything that Boise State brings to the table here as far as what they're coming back. We're talking again about Bachmeier coming back. An offense is a fully stocked backfield, experienced at wide receiver, one of the best sets of linebackers in the country defensively. I don't know, right, about Utah State, because I think this program has slowly turned in a negative fashion under Anderson, and I don't know if Gary Anderson's a very good head coach. I mean, think about it from this perspective. He took over this program after a season in which they were one of the best in the country, 47.5 points per game to 29.2. Jordan Love is now the heir apparent to Aaron Rodgers. They have their all-conference receiver gone for last year. CSOAC Mariner, Caleb Rep, both gone. Not all bad news, though. They got a lot of talent at running back, and the offensive lines were mainly intact. And you got a running back who projected to ran for over 500 yards last year. But against this defense, you can understand why this number is up to 17. The defense doesn't really return a lot. Only five guys defensively for Utah State. I can understand really why the number has not moved off of this 17 right now between these two clubs. It's not a Utah State team I'm high on, and it's not a coaching staff that I'm high on as well. And then you get a really interesting matchup. And I get it, right? UNLV, the hometown team here, not the most attractive of squads, but the market's kind of in. San Diego State originally opened a 16-point favorite at Circa, down to 14, now back to 14.5, total 47.5, up to 50 here. UNLV team that had been dealing with some COVID issues about last week, it was reported. Positivity rate was 2.5%. We don't know exactly the official names of kids affected by it or whatnot, but there was a small COVID outbreak with the Rebels. But the other part of this is a San Diego State team that, while defensively, brings back some pretty good talent, right? They do lose the defensive player of the year from last year, but like, I just don't love this offense, right? Like, Carson Baker named the starting quarterback for the season opener. He appeared at one game last year. It was a 13-3 win over BYU. It's got six returning starters on offense. Jordan Bird's probably the best player offensively. 355 yards, 4.6 yards per carry. And you got an offensive line that gets three back. But I just think the ceiling is pretty low here for San Diego State. The question is UNLV's defense any better? In the regime under Tony Sanchez, the best defensive year they had was 450 yards per game given up. It's not a good unit. There's not a lot of talent there defensively for UNLV. Now you're breaking in a new coaching staff on top of trying to at least rebuild a poor offense. They had a four-man quarterback battle going into this week, whittled down to three. So you don't know what it's like from a continuity standpoint there. A quarterback, you expect Kenny Noblad to be the guy. But regardless, market, I think this is more of the move at least, about being anti-San Diego State, at least at minus 16, with an offense that at least the level that they have, as opposed to being pro-UNLV a week after they were dealing with a small COVID issue as well. So that's the read there for these group of five matchups, at least in the Mountain West. And again, we'll see where that number goes. But I think the market's correct in fixing that number and sharpening that up a little bit. I actually still think three is kind of high for Wyoming on the road against Nevada. And initially thought I might even play two, but that got out of hand pretty quickly and got to five. So that's where I'm at there. With that, we are all done for this week. If you missed out on any part, we should stress this, right? Stress this very much. For those of you who are watching or want a sample of what's going on, vsin.com/podcasts. Nothing to sign up for, nothing to do. You can get the content for free. Just go there, vsin.com/podcasts, or you know, your podcast app. Subscribe to the best bets for VSIN. You get every single one of the shows, boom, right there. Every single time they're uploaded to your phone. You can even set up notifications so every time a new episode is uploaded, like this show, for example, you will be notified right away. With that, Betting Across America is coming up next. Good luck this weekend. Have a good one. We'll see you on Monday.